Mad Men has become a byword for stylish, sexy, critically acclaimed TV. Set in the world of 1960s New York advertising executives, the TV series begins its seventh and final season this Sunday on American network AMC. With me to explain the appeal and success of the show is our reporter and Mad Men devotee, A.B. Philbin Bowman. A.B., before we start, though, you wanted to make a brief point about spoilers.
I did, Ev. This show, in my opinion, is a masterpiece. I'm sure there are people listening who haven't heard it, so I promise during this piece I'm not going to give away any major plot points. I'll refer to characters who are in there, sort of things that happen on the way, but nothing that's majorly going to ruin the series for you.
Now, well, let's start at the beginning then. What was the original intent of the show? What are the themes they wanted to explore, do you think, with Mad Men?
Well, I think the show, the success is partly because it can be enjoyed on a number of levels. I mean, you know, at its most superficial, it's a show about very attractive people who wander around 1960s New York having a lot of sex, which is, you know, great as itself. But at a deeper level, I think it's raising a lot of very interesting questions, and there are some really interesting themes. Now, you know, if you ask 10 Mad Men fans, you'd probably get 15 different answers on what it's really about. I would argue it's about reinvention, and at a number of levels. I mean, the central character is this guy, Don Draper, who's an advertising executive, and he's a model of reinvention. We find out very early in the series that Don Draper is not his real name. So his identity has been constructed somewhat. And because he's 35 in the 1960s, he is by definition a child of the 1930s, the Great Depression. And we find out that essentially that he's come from great poverty and really created this identity as outwardly very successful man. But I also think Don Draper himself works then as a metaphor for, in a way, America and the American dream, which is all about arriving off the boat with no possessions in poverty and working your way up through, you know, creativity and perhaps being a bit economical with the truth and hard work. And he's sort of a symbol for all of that. And also the 1960s, which was about America sort of seeing itself in a different way. And even the advertising industry itself, I would argue the central promise of advertising, if you think about it, is really reinvention, is if you buy our product, if you drink our coffee or shop in our store or drive our car, you will be a better person. You will be a new person. And that's really what it's about, I think, as a series.
And this is a mantra that he lives to, doesn't it? I mean, his passion for his work is incredible. Talk to us a little bit about him.
Well, he, as I said, is this character who in many ways has invented himself. And what I think is really interesting is how much of him, his own life he brings into his work. And the clip we're about to hear, he's pitching for one of those Kodak wheels, Kodak slide projectors. And in so doing, he sort of brings in stories of himself. And you're never quite sure if these stories are totally true. But he manages to then show pictures of his own life. And his own life is actually falling apart as he says this. And yet he somehow manages to wheel it all into the pitch.
My first job. I was in-house at a fur company with this old pro copywriter, Greek, named Teddy. And Teddy told me the most important idea in advertising is new. It creates an itch. You simply put your product in there as a kind of calamine lotion. But he also talked about a deeper bond with the product. Nostalgia. It's delicate, but potent. Sweetheart. Teddy told me that in Greek, nostalgia literally means the pain from an old wound. It's a twinge in your heart, far more powerful than memory alone. This device isn't a spaceship. It's a time machine. Goes backwards, forwards. It takes us to a place where we ache to go again.
The clip we heard there mentioned nostalgia, and you're talking about reinvention. But for a lot of fans, it is about nostalgia, isn't it? That's part of the appeal of this series.
Well, absolutely. And of course, the 1960s is a very glamorous era. Even the music is used quite well here, although sparingly. You've got, you know, hits from people like Beatles and Bob Dylan and others from the 1960s. But also, if you think about it in terms of the appeal it has now, you know, we live in an era where in some sense we're chained to our screens and there's much more awareness of things like health and safety. There's no smoking in the workplace. There are laws on sexual harassment, all of which, by the way, I think are very good things. But I think this show plays on a kind of a nostalgic appeal to a more free time when there was less regulation, and particularly enjoyable when you haven't got to either smell the acrid cigarette smoke or have the boss harassing you personally.
But there are some scenes that are really difficult to watch. I mean, there have been times where you wince watching it, particularly the way the women are treated in the office.
Absolutely, and it does make you watch and go, Jesus, that would never happen today. And yet I think that the way the women negotiate that is something that's brought in a very interesting way. And this show is very true to history. I think the way they use history in the show is quite brilliant. For example, this week we're going through a historic event. Michael D. Higgins is in Britain and it's a historic moment. But for most of us in our lives, we're not eating and sleeping at 24/7. And exactly the same way here in Mad Men, you know, mostly history is not something that's consumed every day. What I think is kind of brilliant, though, is that you get a very true to the time version of history. In the very first season, they're talking about politics, and because we know it's the 1960s and we think these guys are young and glamorous, we expect them to be Kennedy men, but actually they say no, who America needs is Richard Nixon. You're thinking Nixon? He's the 70s, he's Watergate, but that hasn't happened yet, and to them Nixon is the man of the moment, and you'll hear that here.
I was just wondering, there must be any number of people harvesting mud on Johnny Kennedy right now. Have we heard anything?
We hear things, nothing useful. He's a womanizer.
That's not gonna hurt him. Women find out about that, it'll push him over the top.
Nixon is still ahead in the polls.
Should have never been this close.
Why do we need to attack when there's a story to tell? Kennedy, nouveau riche, recent immigrant who bought his way into Harvard, and now he's well-bred? Great. Nixon is from nothing. Self-made man, the Abe Lincoln of California, who was vice president of the United States 6 years after getting out of the Navy. Kennedy, I see a silver spoon. Nixon, I see myself.
The voice of Don Draper there. Now, A.B., we refer to the fact that the women play a particularly important part of this story, very much because of the way they were treated in the office back in the 60s. Nobody flinches from this. We get a sort of an unflattering or maybe very realistic portrait of the battles they had to face in the workplace. So tell us a bit about these women that are around Don Draper, and how do they fight to get their voice, and how do they fight to make their presence felt on screen?
Well, it's a really interesting journey because, of course, they have no network of more powerful women who they can relate to or refer to, and they're really reinventing the wheel for themselves. And again, there's a theme of reinvention for you. And of course, we're also at the epicenter of one of the biggest changes in human history, which is the contraceptive pill, the fact that women could control their own fertility for the first time ever, which is a revolutionary change to human beings. So we see all of that played out. There are two examples I'd cite. One is Peggy Olson, who sort of starts in episode one as a newbie secretary. And by showing initiative and taking opportunities, but also by being given some breaks, they start to realise, this girl's really bright. She really understands what women want. She could be a real asset to us in terms of selling products to women who are a big market. And so she works her way up in a very sort of, I suppose you could say, somewhat conventional, but with the added pressure of being a woman and having to deal with harassment and so on. On the flip side, you have Joan Harris, who plays this, who I think would do rather well at a medieval court. She's brilliant at knowing exactly whose ear to speak into at what moment and how to use power in a sort of behind the scenes way, but is in some ways resigned to the limitations of female power. And there's a really interesting scene where a younger copywriter draws a cartoon of Joan Harris, sort of mocking her and portraying her having sex with an executive. And they react in very different ways to this. And we'll hear a clip of this now where Peggy fires the guy and Joan has a different take on how it should have been handled.
I don't know if you heard, but I fired Joey.
I did. Good for you.
Excuse me?
Now everybody in the office will know that you solved my problem and that you must be really important, I guess.
What's wrong with you? I defended you.
You defended yourself.
Fine. The cartoon was disgusting.
I'd already handled it. And if I wanted to go further, one dinner with Mr. Kreutzer from Sugarberry Ham and Joey would have been off it and out of my hair.
So it's the same result.
You want to be a big shot. Well, no matter how powerful we get around here, they can still just draw a cartoon. So all you've done is prove to them that I'm a meaningless secretary and you're another humorless bitch.
The 60s was also known as the era of civil rights in America and the changing of those race relations. So how is that handled in the series?
I think very realistically and very slowly. You know, you don't suddenly switch on civil rights has happened and, oh, look, half the office is African-American. That doesn't happen. We see very few African-American characters, but gradually they get slightly better jobs. There's one very interesting moment where one of the creative younger people has an African-American girlfriend, and even that isn't handled in a stereotypical way. He has a confrontation with the aforementioned Joan Harris, played by Christina Hendricks, and you'll hear how she handles that in a confrontation with him.
What did you say to Sheila?
Who?
Sheila. My girlfriend.
Describe her to me.
very funny.
I know what's first on the list.
Oh, my God, I knew you were a lot of things.
I'm not a phony.
You're so proud.
It's so obvious why you're seeing her. A supermarket checkout girl? Conversation must be stimulating. Lettuce costs a nickel.
What a relief. You're just jealous.
Because you're the one who got away. You out there in your poor little rich boy apartment in Newark or wherever, walking around with your pipe and your beard, falling in love with that girl just to show how interesting you are. Go ahead. What part is wrong?
So, AB, you said at the start that you weren't going to ruin this with any plot spoilers, but can you give us any sense of what we can expect from season 7? Any hints?
The lovely thing about this show is that even without the plot spoilers, there are just some really beautiful moments that don't even have to hang on a major plot. There's a lovely scene. There's that character Peggy we mentioned earlier, who has a bit of a connection early on with a young account man called Pete Campbell. And there's a lovely scene about three seasons in where they're just both in the lobby and she's with her young sort of hippie-ish 1960s friends, and he's sort of managed to weasel his way into the top table among the senior consultants, and they're all in the lobby, and you have on one side this group of hippies, on the other this group of elderly suits, and they're in and just waiting for the elevator going, who's coming up and who's going down? And it's all just hinted, and there's this moment where they just look across at each other and you realise they've chosen different paths and gone into different worlds, and it's just full of really rich, beautiful moments like that. So that's one of the major reasons to watch this show.
Yes, and what else can we expect though from season 7?
Oh, to be honest, I don't even want to know. I don't want to ruin it for myself or anyone else. I'm genuine on this no spoilers thing. I don't want to know. I want to just enjoy it and watch it, and then I want to watch it again.
Mad Men Season 7 starts this Sunday on American Network AMC. Keep an eye out for it on RT and other broadcasters in the coming months.